I'm going to call the LCC meeting to order here. It could well be termed, looking at the agenda, the Greg Hubinger meeting. It looks like you're going to do most of the presentations, Greg, to us. Members, we do are a little bit short of the quorum yet until Mr. Pogemiller arrives. So we will just utilize time, your time as well as ours. We'll go through some of the agenda items. But those that need approval or those that need votes of the LCC, we will refrain from voting until Senator Pogemiller gets here. And then we will have our quorum, so we will not be challenged that way. Let's see. That probably means approval of the minutes, too. Let's put the approval of the minutes aside for the time being and jump right into item two. Mr. Hubinger, that is the benefit plans, the benefit plans and policies of our LCC employees, which number some 650 persons?
Mr. Chair, between the joint offices and the House and the Senate, that's correct.
Okay. Greg, will you go ahead and go through the proposed benefit book?
Mr. Chair and members, first, thanks to each of you for taking time from your schedules, especially during this holiday season, to participate in this meeting. The LCC needs to approve the legislative plan for employee benefits before the end of the month, so that especially that the insurance provisions can become effective. They are effective by calendar year and provide the insurance benefits for members and staff of the legislature. Generally, this plan establishes larger benefits such as vacation and sick leave accruals and other benefits for employees of the House and the Senate and the joint offices. Some of these provisions, specifically the vacation and sick and insurance, become effective when approved by the LCC. Other provisions that are more general in nature become effective when they're approved by the respective rules committees in the House and the Senate. These proposed changes that are being presented to you this morning are the result of a staff group that has met over the last couple of months. Listing of those folks is at the back of the summary that's included in your packet. In your packet, you have both the summary and then the proposed changes to the plan in legislative format. I've grouped the changes in the summary into three categories. The first is conforming changes, where we talk about changes in the book as a result of changes in state law or changes in collective bargaining agreements with state employees or in compensation plans for unrepresented employees. The second group of changes are the result of proposals and discussion by the staff group that met over the last couple of months and believe that these changes meet some staffing needs that we have in the legislature. And the third is some clarifications dealing with some technical corrections and dealing with some ambiguous provisions. Under the category of conforming changes, as we indicated, the most significant component of the benefit book is the insurance chapter. The legislature has for many years elected to participate in the state employee group insurance program. That's the insurance program that is negotiated by the Department of Employee Relations and the state employee unions. The legislature participates in that, and so we have little choice about what that plan looks like, but we do need to adopt it so that we're covered by it. The most significant feature of the plan this year is the fact that the premiums for calendar year 06 are the same as 05. That's a nice change. The plan has been undergoing increases in double digits for the last several years. I think each of you is probably pretty familiar with the insurance program because you would have gone through the open enrollment process a couple of weeks ago. I'd be glad to summarize that those insurance provisions if you'd like. In addition, there are staff here from the Department of Employee Relations that could talk about that in more detail.
Greg, would you do that and specifically refer to any of the concerns you heard about the health assessment that maybe from a privacy standpoint of individuals? I know you've heard some comments. So.
Steve, you've got a quorum.
We've got a quorum. Senator Pogemiller, glad you're here. The Senate is well represented, Dean, much better than the House.
Well, that's not that unusual.
It's about even. Wouldn't you say 4-2 is about even?
It's about a fair fight right now.
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, as you indicated, new provision in the insurance plan is the opportunity for employees and members to conduct an online health assessment as part of the open enrollment process. If employees do that, complete that review, the co-pays for doctor visits that are scheduled to increase by $5 will be waived for the employee and their family members. The Subcommittee on Employee Relations, when reviewing the AFSCME and the MAPE contracts and reviewing the insurance provisions, had some questions or some concerns about the confidentiality of those responses. And I think the Department of Employee Relations and the unions did a lot of work to reassure employees about that data would be maintained in a very confidential manner. If you have more involved questions, I think it'd be appropriate to ask someone from the department to come up.
No, not for myself. If any other members would like to ask a question of Greg regarding that? If not, continue on, Greg.
Mr. Chair and members, the second conforming change is on the bottom of page 2 of the summary, item 2, dealing with salary savings leave. This was a provision in the state government finance appropriations bill that permits employees to take up to 1,040 hours of unpaid leave during this biennium. This has been a significant benefit for the legislature, especially because it permits employees to take unpaid leave during the legislative interims. The benefit to the employee is that they get some unpaid time off, but they also get to continue receiving vacation and sick leave and participate in the state health insurance program. So the benefit book continues that provision for legislative branch employees. Items 3, 4, and 5 deal with various leaves of absence that were affected by various provisions in session laws that were passed during the 05 session, dealing with military leave, bone marrow and organ donation, and other leaves that were provided in the public safety omnibus bill and in the quarantine bill. Most of these provided some limited amount of leave for employees in very specific circumstances. Item 6 relates to expense reimbursements for members or staff who incur expenses while they're on legislative business. We conform to changes in the commissioners and the managerial plan by providing a somewhat higher reimbursement rate for employees who have specially equipped vans when they're that they personally own when they're on state business. We also conform with the IRS guidelines for reimbursement of members or staff who may use a personal aircraft in carrying out their work.
Craig, what's our rate of reimbursement just for mileage right now for driving?
Mr. Chair, I believe that we conform with the IRS rate, and I think it's 48.5 cents per mile. The last conforming change is a relatively minor one about cashing out of vacation pay. Normally, when a legislative employee leaves the legislature, the amount of vacation that they can be paid out for is capped at 275 hours. We're conforming with a change that is some language in many of the state labor contracts and in the compensation plans that indicates that if the employee actually dies while they're an employee, we will cash out the entire balance of the vacation leave that they've accrued. The next category of changes are ones that were developed in the discussions by the staff group that met for several weeks to develop these proposals for you. The first deals with the use of sick leave. Our current plan permits employees to use sick leave to care for themselves, but also for dependents or children and for their parents. One reality that the HR folks in the House and the Senate and in the joint offices have discovered is that many employees are in the sandwich generation where they care not only for their own family members but also for grandchildren and grandparents. And there really is, in some cases, no one else that can provide that care. So what the staff group is proposing to do is to provide a limited amount of sick leave, limited to 5 days, to allow an employee to care for their siblings or for their grandparents, their grandchildren, or an in-law. The second proposal by the staff group deals with the accrual of vacation leave. When a new employee is hired by the legislature, they earn about 2 weeks of vacation a year, and as they gain tenure here, the amount of vacation that they accrue increases. We are proposing to add, and those accrual rates increase in basically 5-year chunks. We are proposing to add a new tier for employees of the legislature who have 40 or more years of service. They would earn an extra day and a half a year. As I understand it, there is no one currently in the legislature who has that length of service, but by the end of this biennium, there might be one or two employees in each of the House and the Senate that would be eligible.
Mr. Hubinger, who is the other person other than Senator Metzen that has 40 years? There's two.
I heard you. Get back to your...
Go ahead. To number to the third proposal. I just feel very light today, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, the next proposal by the group, it deals with reappointments. Currently, when an employee of the legislature leaves the legislature to be at home for a while or to accept another job, if they come back to the legislature after a certain number of years, if they come back within 4 years, they can earn vacation at a rate that includes both the current service and the former service, the rate that they were at before they left the legislature. That look-back period is currently 4 years. As we attempt to attract, when we have vacancies, to attract people to come to work here, and we sometimes want to attract a former employee, it would be helpful if we could look farther back than just 4 years. And so we're proposing a 10-year window that would be considered. That also allows the employee to use to repost any sick leave balance that they had when they left the legislature before. The last change suggested by staff deals just an informational piece. The House and the Senate have lactation rooms in the state office building and in the Capitol for employees who are nursing mothers, and we just want to add some language in the book so that information is more available to our staff. The last category of changes are just clarifications dealing with some ambiguous or technical changes, and they're listed in the summary. None of them is very substantive. Mr. Chair, members, that's a brief summary of what the staff are proposing.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Members, any discussion, any questions of Mr. Hubinger regarding this entire package of proposed changes to the benefit book, whether it be the conforming changes or the staff proposals?
Mr. Chairman, do you need a motion to approve the minutes from the...
We can go backwards. That'd be fine. Senator Metzen moves approval of the minutes... of the, what meeting was that, March 14th meeting?
March 14th, yeah.
After thoroughly reading the minutes,
that's
Mr. Metzen?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is approved. Let's then go back to the adoption of these policies and benefits that we have before us. Discussion, questions?
Chairman, I'll so move, right? I think it's been worked out. Staff has been involved for quite a while and conforms to the other state employees. So.
Members, I'd like to take this entire package of conforming and staff proposals and adopt them all at once. Before I do so, though, and I probably will be the only one in this room that will voice a concern, I think is staff proposal number one, if you go to staff proposal number one, is not any small change by any means. It's fairly significant. It's a fairly significant change of policy. It's a fairly significant change in use of sick leave. Mr. Hubinger, do our state employees have that in their contracts, in their negotiated contracts? Do they have this use?
Mr. Chair and members, no, this is a provision that does not come from any of the collective bargaining agreements or compensation plans?
I have just done minimal research, members, and it's been very, very minimal. I won't tell you that I've looked into it greatly, but I know that there are some concerns. Other states have gone forward with similar liberalization of their policies, and my understanding from the state legislative council is that they have actually started to contract some of those liberalization of the benefits. I don't know where we want to go. I would suspect this also, if we do it as a legislature, would set precedents for the rest of our state employees in the next round of negotiations. Is that certainly possible, Greg?
Mr. Chair, certainly the employee unions and doer monitor what we do in this book. There are enough variances across the contracts, and especially between the contracts with state agencies and the contracts with the MNSCU employees, that there's a fairly rich amount of variation that can be cherry-picked. And so the Department of Employee Relations always has a challenge in trying to balance the needs of the employer versus the requests of the employee unions.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Metzen.
That could work both ways, though, the cherry-picking thing. So, I mean, it's not like they're not an island of where, you know, so it could work.
That's true.
Mr. Chairman?
That's true. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, is your concern the fact that that this now is in current policy, there's no days. The employee just doesn't have this latitude?
Well, for siblings, grandparents, and grandchildren, I think they're not allowed sick days. Individuals would be allowed to use their vacation time, I believe.
Mr. Chair, under the current plan, employees would have two choices. As you said, to use vacation leave. There's another provision in the plan that allows the employee to use sick leave for caring for the sibling or the grandchild, but only after they have exhausted all of their vacation leave. Mm-hmm. And there is a certification by the dependents or by the person's doctor about the need for care.
So basically, Senator Johnson, you would have to use that vacation time first. Then if that were to be used up, there is a mechanism. And I understand employees wanting to keep vacation separate from sick leave, and I understand all that stuff. It just seems like this is this is no small matter. I just want members to know that this is no small matter. This is a proposal which I can certainly understand where it comes from. We've had members of our own caucus and certainly of the House that have been in this situation. But also, it's just not a small policy change. It's 2, 3, and 4 in the proposal seem to be a little bit easier to accept from my standpoint without great precedent setting. Number one is a very major change, folks. It's a very major change of policy. I suspect that there also has to be at some time or another some accounting to some price, some cost involved in that. I mean, you just can't extend a benefit without it being some cost. You can't have folks gone for up to 5 days or 3 days or 1 day without it being some cost to the system, or the individual's position wouldn't be necessary in the first place. Senator Pogamiller.
I was just reading the language on line 15. At first, I thought.
Where are you, Senator Pogamiller? You're in the booklet?
And it appears, Mr. Hubinger, that current policy is not limited to sick leave for just the employee. It could be spouse, child, stepchild, foster child. And so what this extension is to sibling, brother or sister, grandchild, grandparent. So it really only broadens it within the definition of family. But it is within the family still. So it's not, Mr. Speaker, perhaps it's not as, Mr. Chairman, it's not as large a step quite as at first impression. At first impression, it was this is beyond just the employee's own time. But it's just a little broader definition of kind of immediate family.
What family is?
Mr. Chair, it's clear it's the extended family coverage. There's a fair amount of tension for the employee as well because they earn the vacation or the sick leave and they want to have it available for their own needs or for the immediate family needs if they need it. But second, when they leave state service, that's a portion of their severance calculation, and so there's an incentive not to fill it away.
Senator Pogamiller?
And Mr. Chairman, it does seem with kind of both spouses working nowadays, typically, that one spouse may be helping the other spouse's family maybe a little more than in the past. So I think your point's well taken. It obviously is broadening it. But at first, I thought it was we're now separating the linkage to the employee's illness. But that we, that's already there. It's really just a little broader definition of family.
That's correct. I agree to that. Any other discussion?
It's a mother-in-law provision.
It says mother-in-law. You change it more.
It says mother-in-law.
And in-laws. Okay. Well, then I'm coerced into voting for it then. Members, I am probably the only one that has a concern about this. I'm not sure that I hear any others. I suppose it's a time of the year to be either Santa Claus or Scrooge, I imagine, is what it is. And I'm probably the black Scrooge. But I need to tell you, I have some concerns about this broadening of this policy. I want to be very fair and very upfront with people. I don't want to cause any problems. I don't want to be a Scrooge. Senator Metzen has the motion before us of the approval of the entire policies and benefits. I won't move to amend that. I will tell you that I am just very, very opposed to this one provision. I won't move to amend it. I don't think that we want to get into any confrontation or any hassles, but it just seems a broadening that I think is going beyond what we should be doing at this point. The motion before us of Senator Metzen for the approval of the changes to the employee benefit and policy book.
Well,
okay. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Nay. Motion prevails. Let's see, the next agenda item, third one, Greg, the operating budgets for the joint legislative offices. Members, it'll be in your booklets, in your packets.
Mr. Chair and members, the joint legislative offices, like the House and the Senate, have same level budgets for the 06-07 biennium as we had for the 04-05. The spreadsheet that you have in front of you is the allocation of the appropriation for the joint legislative offices, and we ask your approval of that.
Senator Johnson, move approval.
I move approval.
Okay. Senator Johnson moves approval of the operating budgets for the offices of the legislative offices. Those in favor say aye. Excuse me, Senator Pogonel.
Just a quick question. I know we did something on the environment, the ELS Legislative Commission of Minnesota Resources. What did we do? Why are we? I know it was part of the conference, and I just, where are we on that?
Okay. So Mr. Hubinger, why don't you try, and then I'll try to explain what I know about it.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, the spreadsheet shows an appropriation of $422,000 for LCMR and zero for the second year. Part of the compromise, as I understand it, I think Mr. Boleyn is here to explain it further, but was to there was one proposal to eliminate the LCMR and another one to basically continue it. The compromise was a task force to examine the role of the commission and future directions there to report by the next session. Another part of that compromise was to have a $0 appropriation for the second year, sort of forcing the legislature to deal with this during the 06 session.
Okay.
So Mr. Senator,
if
nothing happens, does the commission still exist, or does someone actually have to pass a bill to have the commission still exist?
Mr. Hubinger.
Chair and Senator Pogomelli, something has to happen for the LCMR to continue after July 1st.
And I believe that those task forces have met at this time. At least there's been some task force meetings, Senator Pogomelli.
So we don't have Mr. Chairman, we don't have a situation where the commission could exist if we do nothing but have no money. We can't end up in that situation.
That's correct. I forget the first name again. Sorry, the director.
John Boleyn, the director for the LCMR. What Greg mentioned is almost all right. The one significant difference is that the legislature did pass the budget for the LCMR for both years. The governor vetoed the second year. So that was not part of the legislative action. It was a veto among 11 veto items. Mm-hmm. He also vetoed the second year of our appropriation. And it's a technicality, but the appropriation amount is actually $449,000. This is the 422 is the same level effort. Obviously, the greater concern is the zero in the second column as opposed to the difference in the first column. And addressing Senator Pogomiller's question, Greg Knopp of the Senate Research has indicated that the commission, the LCMR, has a number of responsibilities different from, over and above, the recommendation to you on the trust fund, and that the conference committee action was not a statutory change, and so the commission's other functions would continue to exist, but obviously they wouldn't be funded in the second year. And I hope I'm not confusing things more, but...
What are the functions that would continue to exist?
There's a whole range of duties that go to reviewing the oil overcharge money, for example, if and when more of that occurs, and that may be reaching back in history further than we want. Oversight of the past trust fund appropriations with regard to final work programs and reports. Oversight of the any land acquisition that may have occurred with trust fund appropriations out into the future. There's actually a page and a half of citations, including some services to the legislature. One of them actually deals with when the Department of Natural Resources purchases forest land in the southeast called the parts of the Door Memorial Hardwood Forest, the legislature determined that they didn't want large family farms to be purchased and converted to state land, and therefore insisted that certain portions, anything that was tillable over, I think it was greater than 10 acres, needed to be then separated out. But there is a provision that if there's good reason, if there's some good management reason, that the DNR would not have to separate that out. So we get those from time to time when DNR has money to purchase land down there. It hasn't happened for quite a while.
Mr. Chairman, just I think one last question. How much of the 422 or 449 would either have to be eaten by somebody else for these functions, or would have to be appropriated for those functions if it was felt it could not be just consolidated somewhere? Do you have a sense of, is it $20,000 or $50,000?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pogermiller, it would be a wild guess to give you a definitive number. Probably more on the order of 50 than 400. Some of those things occur on an irregular basis, and I think that's one reason why the legislature asked the LCMR to handle those things, is because they are somewhat irregular. The land approval for Southeast Forest, for example, only comes up periodically, but it is important when it comes up. So I would really hesitate to give a solid number.
Thank you. John, how did the 449 become 422 again? Explain that to me.
The correct me if I'm wrong when I go through this, Greg. The LCMR makes its recommendations to the full legislature, and that those recommendations generally track through the Environment, Finance, and Policy Committees, and Ways and Means, and onto the floor and so forth, sometimes as a separate bill, but often folded into the Environment Finance bill. Those bills, the long and the short of it is we have to get our recommended budget as a package, funding from the trust fund, into the legislature when you convene. We have a January 15th biennial report due, and that has to have the recommendations into it. So the LCMR adopted a budget in fall of 2004, forwarded that to the 2005 legislature, and the whole package went through. By the way, remarkably, and Senator Metzen could appreciate this, this time, the LCMR package went through the full legislature, both the House and the Senate, and the conference committee, without a single change. No additions, no subtractions, no earmarks, everything went through just fine, and then the governor did the vetoes. But at any rate, the short answer is we had to get our package through it, ready and into the legislature by January 15th. We did not have any LCC budget guidelines until, was it April or May or something like that. And so I had to budget what I thought was going to happen, including a contingency for salary increases subject to the LCC determination for all LCC employees. And I made that very clear in the budget. This is contingent on LCC determination for other employees. And the main reason for that is because being funded from the trust fund, we don't have the option of using other general fund money that might be available. At least I don't consider it prudent to start using other general fund money. The trust fund functions and need to be paid for by the trust fund. So that's why we put that contingent into our budget. And then this, I believe, is the first full approval for these budgets. In other words, there was so Greg's interpretation, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Ebinger, Greg's interpretation of legislative action was what's appropriate is same level. Mm-hmm. We were already at a different level because we didn't have that determination in place in January. It obviously didn't occur until May or later, I guess, even in some cases. So we had this juxtaposition. The subordinate reason to that is I need to have the money available from the trust fund in order to grant salary increases if they're going to happen. So that's why there's a little distinction there. Is that? If part of that's unclear, I can sure go over again.
Leader intends it.
So just to follow that up, is the 422 adequate to fund the work of the LCMR subject to the salary changes and other benefit changes that you may have gone through, or do you need the amount that was passed by the legislature? What is it that you need to fulfill the mission you got? Is the 422 there now because that's what you actually need and that's the appropriate amount, or do you need the amount that the legislature appropriated and was passed through committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Atenza, I can only honestly answer that we need the amount appropriated by the legislature, partly to make sure that we can pay for the whatever salary increases might occur and benefit increases that might occur. Obviously, you heard that they've been less than we all expected, which was a relief, and partly because of this advisory task force that's going on, we actually were able to use the part of the Citizen Advisory Committee budget, a separate amount, to fund the activities of the task force, but none of the staff costs, which are becoming very extensive, are covered by that CAC appropriation. It just covers the expenses for per diem and mileage and meeting expenses and that kind of thing, plus a facilitator to run the process. So it's distinctly, well, it's happening already that my staff has been diverted in large measure to deal with this advisory task force. I can continue to pay for that staff because it's the same staff as always, but there's going to come a point in time when even the meeting expenses and possibly even the facilitator expense is going to exceed the amount that we had available for the Citizen Advisory Committee, the little budget that we used. So I'm concerned in that regard.
Mr. Atenza?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ebinger, do you agree with that assessment, or is it your belief, since the 422 is in your budget, that that's the amount that we need? And if you could explain why the amount was changed from what was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atenza, obviously there is some amount of miscommunication here. I was working with the person in LCMR that is responsible for their budget, and I was led to believe that if the same level budget was appropriated to the LCMR as for all other legislative offices, that they could manage within that amount. And then any excess that had been included in the appropriations bill would resort to the trust fund and be available for projects.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hubinger, since there does seem to be some disagreement about that, and I don't know when we're going to have another meeting on this again, if we change the amount to the amount that was passed by the legislature, actually, I'll ask you two questions. Are there any other changes in here from the amounts that were passed the legislature? There were. So my second question would be, if we modified your proposal to the higher amount because of the other costs that were described, and that wasn't expended, if they were able to do their work, would that money then revert back to the trust fund and be available for projects?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely yes. It goes nowhere else. It can only go back to the corpus of the trust fund.
Chair. Mr. Intendant?
That's all I've got there.
Mr. Minson?
What did you talk about salaries? What does the 422 do to
Would there be no salary increases for your people, or no?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen, in order to accommodate the proposed salary increases, we would have to eat into other items within our budget.
Well, it just seems to me that everybody else around this MAPE and AFSCME and the House and the Senate employees all got a little, finally got a little kick here the last couple of months, and I think that ought to go forward with the LCMR also, and I think these people have to be paid, so, and we've done it with the other ones, so if the 422 doesn't get you there, and who had the authority, Mr. Hubinger, if the Senate and the House passed the 449, and how does it work? It gets to you, and then you can do the 422?
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair,
maybe I'm missing something here. I don't know how you can.
This is sort of the separate tracks that John was talking about. That all of the other budget, all of the other offices in the legislature, including the House and the Senate, are in one bill. LCMR is appropriation is in the Environment and Natural Resources Appropriations Bill, and they follow separate tracks and separate decisions. The leadership in the House and the Senate concluded that the legislature's appropriation for this current biennium would be at the same level as 0405, and what we are trying to do is to force that same discipline on another legislative office, the LCMR. I had been led to believe by other staff in LCMR that if they were operating under the same level budget, that they could pay for their ongoing costs and pay for the salary increases that all the rest of us are absorbing within our same level budgets.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, John.
That is correct. We would have to absorb the staff increases but they would have to. We have to undo some other functions. And the point that Representative Intenza made is correct. This money isn't going anywhere. If it's not spent, it's going back to the trust fund. So it's merely, I mean, I guess Greg and I have had this philosophical difference for a while. I maintain we should be able to pay for everything we should pay for out of the trust fund only. The other juxtaposition is, the real question is how much do people budget, and what does same level really mean? And I don't know if we can answer that now. That's obviously beyond our
discussion. Mr. Hubinger, it looks like you would like to say something.
Mr. Chair, I guess given what Mr. Valina has just indicated and in response to Representative Intenza, I think. And since the LCC doesn't meet very often, I think perhaps the prudent thing would be for the LCC to approve the LCMR budget at the 449 level, recognizing that the amounts not spent would revert to the trust fund.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Intenza.
Well, in light of Mr. Hubinger's recommendation and Senator Johnson had the motion, so I guess I would move to amend Senator Johnson's motion to change the 422 to 449 with the understanding that Mr. Hubinger is going to continue to work with the LCMR on these budget issues, because obviously we want to make sure this transition is done as efficiently as possible, and to just advise us how that process goes forward. But I move to amend that number to 449.
Yep. I don't know if you want
any discussion on that? Just on the one sheet of paper we have, just on the budget sheet, 422 becomes 449 with the other things that Representative Intenza mentioned about the revert of the money. Discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We are then on the full sheet of the operating budgets. Senator Pogamiller.
Brief. If the legislature does nothing, what happens with the trust fund? Is there another group put in place, or is this just all back in the legislature at that point? If no bill is passed, I understand there's this group coming back with a recommendation, but if nothing, what's the state of the current law? If nothing happens in the legislature, what happens to the activities of the commission?
Mr. Hubinger, John, who would like to? John?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pogamiller. We've received advice, and advice from several quarters, as a matter of fact, including former Environment Finance Committee chairs who are now serving on that task force, that the authority to recommend and to finally deal with appropriations from the trust fund would simply revert to the full legislature. So presumably it would go through, it would become part of the Environment Finance Committee, I presume, if the normal structure holds. And that, of course, is if there is no substantive conclusion by the task force and subsequent adoption by the legislature. So the default is the legislature would take it over and have to deal with it in whatever way you choose to deal with it.
Further discussion? If not, we'll proceed to vote on the approval of the entire budget page. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Next sheet of paper, very quickly, Greg, I think you have some title changes for some of the legislative office personnel.
Mr. Chair and members, there's a one-page sheet that titled Joint Legislative Offices, Proposed Title Changes. As we have worked with staff and improving our processes, we've concluded that it's appropriate to change the titles of some positions. The previous title and the proposed changes are listed there. There is no change in salary, no change in salary range from these. This is just an administrative change. As I understand it, the House does this administratively. The Senate takes these changes through the Rules Committee.
Also.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The proposed title changes are approved.
Chairman, it sounds like what the bankers do. You get a better title, but you don't get any more money. I hope it's a feel-good thing.
I think, Matt, we've done that in the House a couple times, too, haven't we?
No more money, but bigger titles.
Let's go on. Ms. Timmons, I believe, is next. The computer system update, here it's going very well.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm Michelle Timmons, the reviser of statutes, and with me today is Robin Ender, also from the reviser's office. I, too, am in a little bit of a light mood today, so my handout is green for go. We are a go with the Extend computer system for the 2006 session. And what I want to do today is just talk about a few key points from the first page and then save a little bit of my limited time today to have Robin show you a few things. I think we have accomplished a lot. We've made a next set of improvements on the website. Because we're implementing Extend in the middle of the biennium, we had to convert the 2005 bills that are still live into the XML format. We've done that. We've converted the 2005 statute supplement material to XML. Robin has done, I think, some excellent work training not only reviser staff, but House and Senate staff on the new system. And I'm pleased to report that we're drafting the new bills and resolutions coming in the Extend system. And quite a few agency bills have already come into the reviser's office. We've got a lot left to do before the session. We have quite a bit of functionality yet that's necessary for the session that we have to add in January and February. We've got to debug over the next 3 months and do some heavier duty performance testing than what we've done to date. So I think things are going very well, but there is one thing that I'd like to ask of you as legislative leaders, one thing that you could do to really help us as we go through this first session of the conversion is to help keep the expectations reasonable. I mean, I've done all kinds of reading about how to manage major computer conversions, and one thing everybody says is expect the unexpected and keep your expectations low because we know there will be problems. I may not know today what even they will be, but we know there will be bumps. And so they may cause some delays, and we hope that if those things happen that you will be patient and help us with that viewpoint. So thus, having said that, page 2, really, I'm not going to make the points orally. really talks about some of the changes we've made on the web system. And I'd like Robin to just quickly show you what we've done with the search mechanism.
We have a little bit of a new page here. The search topics are still basically the same. Search by topic, keywords or phrases. We have a table of contents. You can retrieve an entire chapter, retrieve a section. When we search by keywords or phrases, the exact phrase, all of the words, any of the words, background check means it looks for these two words together. If you click all of the words, it looks for them individually in the documents. If you don't specify any chapters to search, it will search the entire statute, and we just hit go. It's very fast. lists all the documents that it finds hits in, and you click on the document. The highlighting is now in yellow rather than black on the screen. These little blue arrows here will navigate you through the document to the next hit. And you can go backward and forward. If you're on the very first one, it will take you to the end of the document if you go backwards. Up here it tells you how many hits are in that document for that search term.
Most of the other web improvements are background things that aren't as easy to show you. So this, unless there are any other questions about the web improvements, this was the one thing that I wanted to just give you a little heads up on. So,
excuse me.
Oh, yes.
Ms. Timmons, I assume you have an internal user group. Are they as excited about where you're at as you guys are?
Well, I think so. I mean, Robin maybe has a better handle on that than I do, since she's done the training. But I think generally reaction is positive.
Maybe I just ask either. I see mm-hmm. Mr. Watson. Who's the staffer or house staffer? Are things going okay, or do you not want to be
Mr.
in the middle?
Mr. Senator Polk Miller, this will be a great system when it's done.
He says diplomatically, meaning we do have things to fix, but.
but this conversion is done by the start of the session, right?
It will be.
It's just,
I mean,
you need a little problems, a little tinkering.
Yes. I mean, that's what we're hoping. There are things that, you know, will have to be later enhancements. I mean, one example is that in the past, we've written conversion programs to convert Microsoft Word documents into TE. We are not going to have a conversion program written before session. We may not ever need to write a conversion program, and long term this may be easy enough that we don't need to have one. So that's an example that springs to mind of something, you know, that we won't have by this session. We will have enough to go into operation and use the new system, however.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Watts, I'm not trying to put you in a difficult position, mm-hmm. but is there a house person that could... I'm just curious, is this something that the staff will feel comfortable with, that they won't have to do two systems in March, or are we going to have a situation where you're going to be doing both worlds?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogue, I don't think there's any prospect of having two systems.
No.
There's a prospect of having one system, mm-hmm. and the system that we've seen so far will do the things that need to be done. Mm-hmm. It's just that with some of the functions, it takes a little while longer to figure out how you're supposed to do it. And mm-hmm. so it's not going to be fast in the way that the previous system was fast until after we get some bugs worked out and after the staff has had mm-hmm. more of a chance to work with it and learn it. So we may be kind of not up to full speed by the time we get to March. But mm-hmm. we'll be able to do everything, I think.
Right.
It just won't be as fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I add something? From doing the training, the people that I've trained have learned it very quickly. The ease of use of the system it has been good, and people have been very excited about that. People who were really nervous about using it have really been excited about what they saw. The best thing that we've done is gotten all these users on the system right now, so we are getting a lot of testing, and we are finding bugs that we didn't know about, but this is a good thing, and we doing it early now is a really good thing for us. So we'll have most of them fixed by March.
So, Mr. Chairman, it sounds like we may want to let legislators know that they need to be sensitive in the House and the Senate to the may not quite be as quick. But, and then if I just, Ms. Timmons, why do you drag foreign policy into this? I see you have a DMZ zone.
Did I drag foreign policy?
We have a DMZ zone here.
Oh. Yeah, that's a demilitarized zone in security terms, in computer terms, means that it is out in front of the firewall so that it's more secure. And then the one behind the firewall is more secure. So that's the answer to that. Okay, moving on to page 3. Again, I'm not going to read all of the features that we do have developed in the new Extend system, but there are a couple of interesting ones that I'd like Robin to show you, especially I think we're going to start with side-by-sides, right?
Yeah, we want to impress you, so we're going to start with a good one. This is what the new editor looks like. It looks a lot like Word, which is why users have been having a much easier time learning it. Lots of pull-down menus, and we've developed two or three ways to do just about everything for drafting, so we're trying to accommodate every kind of user. To create a new side-by-side, this is a huge improvement for us over the old system. We've always had to create side-by-side documents manually, meaning an attorney sat down with two documents or three documents and went through them and wrote down, put this section next to this section, this section next to this section. Mm-hmm. We now have a program that can match the statutory language in the documents for us. Mm-hmm. I can put one or more documents on either side. I'm just going to do one here. Okay, first I generate a control file. This will tell me what statutory sections it could match from each document. Over on this side, it gives me a list of the sections that it couldn't match. It will not match uncoded language. It cannot match anything that doesn't have an exact head note. Like effective dates it can match and repealers it can match, but anything else uncoded it doesn't match. So it will give us a list. We can print this out, and then the user can go through and determine where to match these sections. But when I hit generate side by side, it's a little hard to see on the screen because of the font size. So I'm going to do a print preview here and see if I can make it a little bit bigger for you. And this is where it's a benefit for you now, too. Not only is this a little bit easier for us to create, but what we've done is we've been able to highlight in each column where the differences are in those sections. So on the printout that the committee gets for these side-by-sides, you will have a shading over where the changes are. I know the font is hard, but the difference is it's one H and one G here. Mm-hmm. If I go down, you can see, find another section. It highlights the differences in the language. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that the committees will appreciate this, and we're also using a variation of this program for the House desk comparisons. So the members, when they get the comparisons, will be able to quickly tell what the differences are at the desk.
Michelle?
Yes. Are there any other features you would like to see? We can show you other features to do a statutes check or show you how the committee report and engrossment you were prepared to show. Is there anything else you'd like to see or
Senator,
any other questions?
Will you be able to print this with color, or how is
well,
it?
Well,
it won't be with color, shading.
Shading, but it'll be obvious.
I think that the printing may be in a gray shading. We're going to have to play with that. I mean, we could do it on a color printer. We could print it with a color for you, but then it's going to get more expensive. So it probably will be a gray tone shading. So we may need to get some feedback from members on, you know, whether it does show up well. But we can play with the tint of it. So
how about color for the conferees?
Yeah.
And everybody else gets gray.
Everybody else gets gray. Yeah.
You make those conferees.
Something we can definitely look at.
Michelle, the total computer system conversion now going to cost us X amount. What's the X?
We've spent about $5 million to date. It'll be about $6 million by the end of calendar 2006, and that's the date that, because as you can see, we still have administrative rules and court rules yet to go, plus There is a lot more to do on the bill drafting system too. We need to have the editing programs ready by next summer for the first editing and publishing cycle that we'll be doing in the new system. So
with the $500,000 from each, the Senate, the House, and the LCC,
yes,
is that in that $6 million?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman.
It's paid for. You're not going to need another appropriation or.
I certainly hope not.
You're not going to have to come back to the Senate for some more money.
we fully intend to complete the project with the appropriation.
Okay. Any other further questions of the computer conversion? Anything of Michelle or Robin? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for the update. And the last thing on the agenda, Barry and Steve. If you will, a little bit of an update here on the television coverage for the upcoming session. I understand your contracts have come in a little higher than expected, meaning the coverage will go down unless we do something. Barry, will you take
that? That's a possibility. Mr. Chair, members, I'm Barry LeGrave, Director of House Public Information Services. In your packet is a copy of my testimony, and Steve Senek, Director of Senate Media Services, has joined me. And we're here to give you a little update about the plans for our legislative television coverage for 2006-2007. As you may know, the House coverage is produced by my office, and the Senate coverage is produced by Senate Media Services under the direction of Steve Senek. The programming is provided during the day from 8:15 a.m. until 5 o'clock p.m. each day, and in some instances past 5 p.m. Steve and I have used the funds appropriated to the Legislative Coordinating Commission to establish contracts to distribute our programming to the residents of Minnesota. To do that, we have four main contracts that we enter into. Number one is a fiber optic contract with Quest Communications. That contract provides for a fiber optic link between the state capitol control rooms and our broadcast and cablecast providers. Second contract is that we hire a local court reporting firm to provide live closed captioning for the hearing impaired. A third contract is we contract with Minnesota Satellite and Technology to provide satellite delivery of our programming to approximately 30, a little over 30 cable systems around the state of Minnesota. One note, Minnesota Satellite and Technology, otherwise known as MinSat, is a division of telecommunications division of MinSku. And lastly, we have a over-the-air broadcast contract with Twin Cities Public Television. They provide our programming to the Twin Cities metro area on TPT Channel 17, and they also provide Greater Minnesota viewers, some Greater Minnesota viewers, with programming via the DISH network. While we are still negotiating these four contracts, there is a concern that some increased contract costs may result in a reduction of coverage in 2006 and 2007. As you saw on the Legislative Office budget rundown, the appropriation to the LCC for 2006-2007 is $720,000. Now, our fiber optic costs have stayed relatively stable, and that is a two-year contract. The closed captioning firm is increasing their rates about 5%. However, their rate increase is, that's the first rate increase in 4 years. Our satellite delivery costs with MNSAT have increased slightly. Now, we have not yet had cost discussions with Twin Cities Public Television, but Steve and I are meeting with them this afternoon. Again, we've had at least one meeting with them so far. So while not knowing the final contract costs for these four contracts, we're looking at the possibility that the increased contract costs may result in a reduction of the number of hours of legislative television programming in 06 and 07. As a baseline for you to know, a full TV coverage for 2006 and 2007 would total approximately 1,610 hours. That's 8 3/4 hours a day, 5 days a week, with the assumption of a 12-week session in 2006 and a 20-week session in 2007. We're estimating a possible reduction of about 84 hours, down from 1,610 hours to 1,526. And so that would be a loss of approximately 10 days of coverage. Now, those reductions can be managed in a couple of ways. We could delay the start time on Monday mornings to 10 a.m., or we could delay the start time Tuesdays through Fridays from 8:15 a.m. until 9 a.m. We could also choose to end programming at 4 p.m. each day instead of 5 p.m. Another option would be to not provide coverage on Fridays, since very few Senate committee meetings meet on Fridays, and on the House side, there are no regularly scheduled House committee meetings on Fridays. And lastly, we could decide to delay the start of television coverage in January of 2007. So we have a number of options. They all have impacts. If we delayed the start times to 9 a.m., for example, during the week, that would make it difficult, if not impossible, for any of the early morning House committees that started at 8:15 a.m. To be broadcast. In addition, varied start times do pose a problem for Twin Cities Public Television. If we look at ending earlier in the day, that would certainly negatively affect afternoon coverage of House floor sessions or Senate committee hearings. In fact, one of the biggest challenges that Steve and I face, that we continue to face, is the inability to provide complete gavel-to-gavel coverage in the afternoon past 5 p.m. on Channel 17 when sessions run long or when committees run long. It's a challenge that we've faced for a number of years and continue to do so. The option of having fewer Fridays where there's fewer committee meetings, that is certainly an option. We like to use Fridays from a broadcast standpoint to air meetings that we've taped earlier in the week that we did not air. And finally, the option of a delayed start in 2007. We're looking at a possible loss of 10 hours or 10 days of programming. So instead of starting coverage on January 3rd of 2007, it would take us to about January 17th. Obviously, as you know, in the budget year, many of those early on committee hearings are just overviews of agencies and overviews of programming of various programs, and that content still would be available for us to play back once we did go on the channel. And it's important to note that during 2004 and 2005, we actually broadcast 1,333 hours of coverage and not the anticipated 1,610 hours. Certainly that's because maybe on a Wednesday afternoon, if we didn't have any compelling events at 2:15, we maybe went off the channel. So, however, in planning our budget, we do have to budget for the 1,610 hours, the anticipated coverage, and we build that into our contracts. Finally, I did want to mention that it's not uncommon for the House or the Senate, or House and the Senate, to supplement unexpected shortfalls in legislative television funding. It was done in March of 2003 when the governor unallotted this line item, and it was done actually again this year with the 2005 special session. The House and Senate both supplied some operating funds to allow for special session coverage. And if the House and Senate chose to, they could supplement any funding shortfall in order to ensure a full schedule of legislative television coverage for the next 2 years. As a side note, in your folder along is a copy of the article from the Pioneer Press in May of this year, which detailed the significant increase in ratings that legislative television experienced this year. And as evidenced by the surge in viewership this past session, we know that many people are watching legislative television coverage. And I can assure you that Steve and I are working hard during these current contract negotiations to effectively and efficiently provide legislative television coverage to the citizens of Minnesota. Mr. Chair and members, that's an update of the plans and challenges we face for 06 and 07. And Steve and I would be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Thank you, Barry. Steve, would you like to add anything right now?
No, I have nothing else to add. I think Barry kind of explained it well. I do remain confident that we will get the major events televised. So I think we'll be okay.
There are some anticipations you're making. How long the session's going to be, 1,610 hours, what the contracts are. You haven't settled the contracts yet?
No, we're still negotiating.
This is basically just to let us know of some concern on the horizon potentially.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And you do have some options, too, that are some better than others, I think.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Any questions of Barry and Steve? Otherwise, members should note in what Barry handed out to us in the St. Paul article, as I showed Senator Johnson, third paragraph down, it said, Senator Dean Johnson, clever quips. Senator Johnson, that was very neat. That's good. Senator Coleman.
Sure. So are you not asking to up it a little to allow your flexibility in negotiations, or are you saying that you're comfortable with the amount you have, but that if things don't go quite right, you might have to do some of these things?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pogamiller, yes, we're comfortable because none of these contracts are finalized. We're still in negotiations, and I think the first option is try to fit within the budget parameters that we already have.
I see.
Okay, Barry, questions for Barry and Steve? If not, members, thank you for coming. Thanks for your attention, and LCC is adjourned.